want to welcome everybody to the council meeting in the city of Schroeder, Monday, April 11, 2016, 7 p.m. First line of business is call order, roll call, Mr. Stahl.
Alderman Jennings.
Present.
Alderman McCowen.
Present.
Alderman Snell.
Present.
Mayor Moses.
Present.
Mayor Pro Tim Adams.
Present.
Alderman Wheeler.
Present.
We have a forum.
All right, thank you very much. Next line of business, pledge allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which stands one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. I pledge allegiance to the flag, one state under God, one and indivisible.
Bay Area, V-Twins Motorcycle Riding Club.
Moving on to item 3.0, special presentation. 3.1, recognition of Motorcycle Safety Awareness Month. V-Twins Motorcycle Group, I don't believe anybody's present for them here tonight. At this time, we will go ahead and announce this proclamation here. Now therefore, I, Rick Moses, Mayor of the City of Schroeder, do hereby proclaim the month of May 2016 as Motorcycle Safety and Awareness Month in the City of Schroeder, Texas. I do not have anybody to present this at this time, so I'm going to go ahead and hand this to Mr. Stahl, and maybe we can come back out another night to do pictures and whatnot. Thank you very much. Moving on to item 4.0, approval minutes. If the council's had time to fill the minutes. Entertain a motion. 5.0, council reports and requests. 5.1, Mayor Moses. 5.1.1, chief of police resignation. I think everybody's aware of now that Chief Harrison has tendered his resignation. He's going to move on into the safety field. He's very excited about it, and we're excited that he's moving into somewhere he wants to, but we're very sad to be seeing him leave. We'll go into that a little bit more when it comes down to time when the chief speaks here shortly. 5.1.2, items of community interest. I had a meeting with the Southwall folks Friday before last, I believe it was. Myself as resident, Mr. Lanier and whatnot, we were all there. We sent out a survey over on the wall. Basically, once I get all the reports back on the survey, we're going to present it to TxDOT, and we're going to talk about the wall a little bit more. About the general aspect of the wall. They're just about completed. There are some issues with some residents with flooding, so they're going to look into that. So we're still discussing those items at this time. Also, I want to apologize. There was a correction I want to make. I had made a mistake on David performance. In the private sector, we do not allow performance evaluations or discipline actions to be public record. But however, in the city aspect or governmental aspect, certain things are public record. David's performance record evaluation, they are for public record, and you can see them. You can get a copy at City Hall if you request one. However, I wanted to apologize for my mistake. I didn't think I needed to check with the city attorney on that, and evidently I should have, and he would have set me straight, but he was sitting here, and he didn't catch it either. So I made a mistake, and I want to announce publicly that I did make a mistake. Maybe I'll just stone me later, but I apologize for my error. Moving on from there, 6.0, public hearings, public comments. 6.1, public comments. This is the opportunity for the public to address council and comment on items which appear on the agenda. Time is limited to 5 minutes per speaker. Comments are directed to the city council. Dialogue with the audience is not permitted. Council members are prohibited by law participating in discussions, deliberation, items specifically identified on this agenda. With that saying, I'm going to start to right, work my way on the back, stretch this way. So, Mr. Morton, please, sir. State your name and full address, if you would, sir.
Good evening. I'm Neil Moyer. I live on North Country Club Drive. I'm going to speak on two items I believe are still on the agenda. 8.2.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Can you give me your...
18.
Thank you, sir.
North Country Club Drive.
Thank you.
8.2 and 8.5. Mr. Jennings is the sponsor of item 8.2, which has to do with the adoption of speed limits within Shore Acres. It appears that we're going to try to rely upon some authority that was vested with the Harris County Commissioner's Court under state law to see if we can move to retain the 20-mile-per-hour speed limit where we have it and put it in other places where we think we need it. I'm a little concerned of whether or not the Harris County Commissioners, of course, is aware that we're going to be coming to them. We certainly, I think, should be in contact with Mr. Emmett and certainly our own Commissioner, Mr. Mormon, that we have an expectation that they will be able to take this up and do us some good. So I hope that will take place shortly should this resolution pass. It might have been preferable to take place beforehand, but life goes on. Item 8.5 is a proposal by Councilmember Snell. This may be the second or third time that she has suggested that the city doesn't need written minutes, that we can all listen to the recordings of the meetings no matter how long they go on. I think the written minutes serve a useful community function and that they become part of the council record. The council looks at the minutes, sees if they properly reflect their understanding of what took place, and they take action on it. That doesn't happen with the recording, and of course, I'm standing here with the expectation that a recording is being made, but there's nothing which assures any of us that the recording, in fact, is whole and complete and without error. So I think this proposal being proposed again is unnecessary. I think we get along quite well with written minutes. I think they serve the community members much better than the demand that everybody listen to the minutes. The meeting fully out long. And I understand, and I hope it's the case, that item 8.6 is not going to be on the agenda. I don't know that's going to be the case, so I'm not going to take up your time with it. But I hope that you would give some deference to the public if that item stays on the agenda so that we can talk on it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Moyer. Ms. Graves.
Gerald Victor, 3346 Miramar. My comments are about the proposed speed limit changes. I'm perplexed about the legal opinions I've heard so far. However, I believe council has legal authority to change those speed limits to what the citizens want. Now, council member Snell posted an email from the general counsel of the TML about the council's authority to set speed limits at 10 miles per hour and above. He stated, a city council can make changes and findings relating to subsection B3 to impose the lower limit if it so chooses. The power to do so rests solely with the city council. Skip over this. On March 28th, the city attorney, while discussing the legality of using section B-3 to declare the lower speed limit, in his words, stated to you, council, you can do it. That's his words in the recording. And later, he affirmed in a second time while addressing council. The council has the authority. He also told council, in his words, all that is needed is for the majority of council to agree that the streets under consideration are one-way or two-way access. Again, those are his words. I'm asking council to approve an ordinance that respects the safety concerns of the citizens. You have two ordinances in front of you. I believe the Snell ordinance addresses my primary concern for safety in the park areas. The Jennings ordinance helps to address the speed issue, but increases the speed limits in the park areas and elsewhere. In the Jennings ordinance, there is a provision to seek help from the county commissioner's court to lower the speed limit from 25 to 20. Now, my question is, why would a commissioner respond to that request if he knows any city with a population of less than 2,000 can legally lower the limit to 10 miles per hour? It wouldn't make any sense if I was the city, or I mean the county commissioner. I believe the Jennings ordinance has some positive recommendations. It establishes a prima facie speed limit of 20 miles per hour in the city except for non-thoroughfare streets. However, it adopts a 25 mile per hour enforcement speed limit in the city. And the other part is it ignores section B-3 option and ignores section 542.202A6 for lowering speeds in parks. I would like to see the Jennings ordinance modified or tabled and revised at a later date to allow each neighborhood, that is Country Club, Bay Forest, Eastside, to submit their recommendations using a questionnaire similar to what the mayor just emailed out, but except it would require signatures and addresses. Do I have any time left?
Have a call.
Yes, sir. Have a couple minutes?
No, thanks.
Just mention what other cities are doing. There's a bunch of them. I reviewed the websites of about 35 cities in this general area. El Lago, all residential streets are 20 miles per hour. Clear Lake Shores, all residential streets are 20 miles per hour. La Porte, all parks are 10 miles per hour. Hitchcock, 20 streets have 20 miles per hour speed limits. Bayou Vista, all streets within the village are 20 miles per hour. Santa Fe, 31 streets are 20 miles per hour, 7 are 15. That's in their city code. As many streets in Friendswood, Pearland, Galveston have 20 mile per hour streets, usually in the entire subdivisions or gated communities. That's all I have. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Move on. Comments, 7.0 administrator report, 7.1 general activity report, city administrator Dave Stahl.
Good evening. West Country Club Drive, you may recall that they were supposed to start construction today on that project. In preparation for that, they have been televising the line and preparing for the work that was to start today. And they have found that where the point repair had been made, previously where we replaced a piece of pipe that had collapsed, that the pipe beyond that is also in such shape that they're having difficulty clearing the line so that they can line that. They're going to be working this week to clear the line and to do some more television investigation and to have their other division that does pipe bursting come out and look at that. And they may be coming back to us saying that they're not going to be able to cure in place at least that section and may have to pipe burst that. They will know the answers to all of these questions and the impact it has next week. So we're on hold for yet another week on that project. The next item I have is the speed limit survey. The constant contact system that we use to send out notices of meetings and our news briefs has a feature that we have used in the past to do surveys. And so this is not an election, it's just a survey to get a sense of the public that the mayor sent out. And so that went out to over 400 subscribers to our list. Each was asked 10 questions and also given the opportunity to comment. Council has the breakdown in the packet for the benefit of the audience. I will give a summary of the answers to each of those 10 questions. The first question was, do you believe that the current speed limits on the city's residential streets are reasonable and safe? 58.5% of the respondents said yes. Next question is, what do you think the most reasonable speed limit would be for those streets in Shore Acres that today have a 30 mile an hour speed limit? 38, the high return on that, 38.3% of the respondents said 20 miles an hour. The second was 34.3% of the respondents said 30 miles an hour. And I guess I should have mentioned we had 99 respondents. So 25% of the people we sent this out to responded. So it was 20 miles an hour first, 30 miles an hour second, with 25 coming in at 21.2 in third place. The next question, three questions were specific to streets. The question was, the speed limit on Miramar Drive is 20 miles an hour, and it asked if that was too fast, about right, or too slow. An overwhelming 76.7% said just about right, it should stay 20 miles an hour. Asked about the 20 mile an hour speed limit on Park Lane. Likewise, an overwhelming 68.6% said just about right, should stay 20 miles an hour. On 20 mile an hour speed limit on Bioforest and Windleaf, another 65.6% said just about right, should stay 20 miles an hour. And then the question was asked, if the city council would declare the speed limit on all residential streets to be 25 miles an hour, would that be safe, somewhat unsafe, no opinion, some would say safe. That came in with a weighted score of 3.2, which would be on the somewhat safe perspective. The next was if it were 20 miles an hour, and it was 3.7 on the safe, and 30 miles an hour was 2.7 on the somewhat unsafe. So of the three speeds that were queried, the 25, 20, and 30, the preferred of the three was the 20 mile an hour speed. Then we asked, what would be your level of approval if the city council adopted residential speed limits citywide, including Miramar Drive, Circle, Bioforest, and Windleaf? This is for residential streets, so it excludes 146 and Old 146, and the divided boulevard of choice. And the high approval went to 20 miles an hour. So the most approved above the mean was 20 miles an hour, then just below the mean was 25, and then we dropped down to 30. With 15 and 10 being at the bottom. So, again, the most preferred was 20 miles an hour. To look at the responses, particularly as we looked at specific streets, the question was asked, what area of the city do you live in? 39 of the respondents, which is also 39%, live between Sunrise and Miramar, 29% between Westview and Old 146, and 22 respondents in the Country Club Edition area, and 6% in Bioforest. We also had respondents from three non-residents, and that was asked so that we could take those out if necessary. The 3% didn't make a statistical difference on any of the answers. Then we have the comments, of which there are 5 pages of comments, which council has. That were turned in with that, and the council has been provided this afternoon with a copy of those to review. And that's what we found out on the survey. It just is overwhelmingly, in that survey anyhow, indicates that the residents would like to see 20 miles an hour citywide.
All right, David, thank you. Before we move to 7.2, any questions from council now? I'll move to 7.2, monthly police report. Chief Harrison.
Thank you. Mr. Mayor and Council, you've been given the report. You've had it for a couple of days to look at, so the numbers stay somewhat consistent with what we've been doing. We did have a residential burglary last month, which is kind of out of the ordinary. there were some things stolen that we've got entered into the TCIC NCIC system, so if it's phoned or if we have a way of tracking it through the lead system or something, hopefully we'll develop some leads on that. Other than that, it was a pretty typical month with some accidents and some house watches, and a lot of citations being issued. Yes, sir.
Expand on the residential burglary, sort of like what part of the city, how did it happen? I mean, don't tell us the exact address.
Sure. South Country Club area.
Great.
And it occurred during the daytime hours. I have no doubt the burglary occurred. I'm not saying it didn't occur, but there was two large dogs in the house. And when Sergeant Thompson and I tried to search the house, we were pretty afraid ourselves trying to get through the house because these dogs were very upset we were in the house. So I tend to believe somebody that knew those folks. The items, there was a guitar, a high-dollar guitar stolen. There was some computer equipment that could be traced. Some of the stuff is being utilized, and we're working on a grand jury subpoena right now to try to get Microsoft to give us some of the information, try to discover an IP address that we can locate it.
Yes, sir. Bomb threat, or is that just a missed call again from?
Yeah, I saw that. I can't find anything. It probably came in as some type of noise or something, and it goes in the system like that. But we did not have a bomb threat or anything.
And then the seven cases of the reckless driver conduct, was that road rage, or was it actually in our city, or? Through our city.
Well, that's a great question, because the majority of these calls, like road rage, comes because somebody's calling in as they leave Seabrook or they leave LaPorte, and they call us, and by the time we get to the freeway, if we're not already there, we never even find the vehicle. We did not, that I'm aware of, have any calls last month that was our citizens or anything in our city. Mostly it's on the freeway, and they're never located.
And the lost or missing recovered?
We've got a missing juvenile that's 15 years old. We've been working on. There's a lot of details on that. She's a runaway. She's listed as a runaway. And because she's a juvenile, I can't elaborate a lot. But it's an active investigation. Sergeant had himself and Officer Hossie the most part of the day that was contacting friends and relatives and still trying to do a little work on it.
And the other accident, was that the one where they took out the stop sign here?
No. Where was that?
Freeway at one time.
Sir? Yeah, it was on the freeway. The one down here was more like they hit the stop sign and fled, and we had like four different descriptions on what it went from a black Jeep to a small red car. I don't know how it was so different, but... we looked for a vehicle that had severe damage, because the damage it did to the stop sign, I'm guessing the vehicle had substantial damage, but nobody actually followed them and called in like they normally do in our city.
Okay, Chief, thanks.
You're welcome.
Question. I met with the Chief this morning, myself, Mr. Stahl, and Sergeant Thompson, and we've discussed it, and Sergeant Thompson has accepted the acting position as police chief. So once Chief Harrison steps down, basically Thompson will be coming in as our acting chief. My understanding also, for full disclosure of the council, I have a nephew that's a police officer that has applied for a reserve position, correct? Not a paid, reserve position, by the name of Jimmy Alanis. So I wanted to have that out there in full disclosure to the council. He's going through the same process as any other officer, correct?
Yes, sir.
Any questions from Chief? Chief, we know we're going to get you one more time here before you go, but you've done an excellent job, and I surely appreciate everything you've done for the city.
Oh, I would, if you give me just a second, I would like to say that all good things come to an end. Somebody told me that once, someone says. But I want to thank you guys, right? You, Matt Weber, trusted me to take this position. The five council people sitting here, besides almost having to arm wrestle Mr. Jennings over my cars, it's been a great experience. And David and I, the good thing is we understood that sometimes there's business, and we separated that. But you guys have been great, Bo Bacher and Steve Jones were great. It's been great. When I applied for this job, there was some concern about coming from a school district, whether I could handle a municipality or not. And I tell you what, I don't know why it was a question, because I think that as long as you remember that it's all about customer service and pleasing the citizens, then I don't care what business you're in, you'll be successful. You got to remember that you work for the people. They don't work for you. And sometimes I have to remind people that myself. I don't have to remind you, and I'll just take 30 more seconds here, that the department I took over was not in real good shape. We were struggling. And since we took over, I did what I thought was right. I used some leadership principles I'd used in the past. I hired great people. I hired Sergeant Thompson, Officer Hossie. I hired really good people. And I tell you what, we adopted a standard operating procedures, rules, and regulations manual that met the Texas Police Chief's best practices, which put us in line with other departments and our pursuit policy and our use of force policy and those things that's so important that you can get a city sued so quickly. We came in line with what the practice and what the standard is in the state. The evidence room was a nightmare. Sergeant Thompson worked hard. The evidence room, we found drugs from the 1970s that were still in there that had to be destroyed. We were successful in cleaning it up, and they were all destroyed this year. We brought us into compliance. We had over 60 firearms in there that had to be destroyed or something. The CJIS audit 2 years ago or 3 years ago, we had 26 deficiencies. We're down to one small deficiency that we're working on. The TCOL audit, there was no issues. The training, when we took over, each officer had a bare minimum, about 20 hours a year, because that's what they had to have. Now each officer is having over 100 hours a year, because we hired Officer Loveless, who came from a background of training, and he did a lot. We subscribed to Police One and used our money wisely and did that. The sex offender registration is up to date. NCIC, TCI validations are all up to date. Those were behind. Dispatch moved to LaPorte out of Lakeview. Thank you, Mr. Stahl. He had way more to do with that than I did. I just benefited from it the first month as chief. And community involvement. I've joined the Rotary Club in LaPorte, going to the chief's breakfast. I would make the meetings out here where we can, but we've really become involved in the community. And I have many more personal accomplishments. I won't go on. It's about the department. But it is time for goodbye. And I'm going to leave you with the old MASH for people of us that watch MASH. It's like goodbye, farewell, and God bless the city of Shore Acres and its citizens. Thank you.
Chief, before you ride off into the sunset, I got a question for you.
Yes, sir.
Is there a possibility that we're going to carry your commission as a reserve officer so you don't learn your TCO?
I hope so. Yes, sir.
So we'll still be seeing you then?
Absolutely.
You'll be riding around the neighborhood still?
Hopefully, enforcing 20 mile an hour speed limit.
Hey, I want to say something real quick. My family has had not a lot of dealings, but some dealings with the chief, and my son has come to really respect and love this man, and not just for my son, a lot of the kids around here learned to respect law enforcement because of him. And that says a lot for the city and a lot for you as a chief.
Okay. I know I broke my rule. I let him talk. All right, we're going to move on to 7.4. Monthly Public Works Report.
Dave? Nina, you have Mr. Ingrid's report in your packet. I have a couple notes I'd like to add to that. Our water consumption is continuing a downward trend. That means we're tightening our system up. We'll be reducing our projection for water purchase to the LaPorte Water Authority next fiscal year by 30%. So we came in well below what we had projected this year, and we see that trend continuing, and that's a very positive thing. Our water losses are down. We had some issues with refilling the ground storage tanks at water plant number one, which is right at the Public Works building. And as a result, our system automatically calls for well water to make up for that shortage. Because of that, the ground storage tanks here ended up with about 50% well water over a period of about a week for makeup water. There's nothing wrong with that. We are well below our 10% cap on groundwater taking. But what it does do is well water and the surface water have different tastes and odors to them. This is perceivable, particularly the closer you are to that plant where your mix is stronger of the well water. The other thing we do is we chlorinate the well water, so the chlorine level residuals are higher when we're pumping well water because we put chlorine gas right into that water stream. And so you may have noticed some of that in this last month. Also, we had an issue where the booster pumps at Water Plant 2 on Bioforest kicked out. They were just reset. The system locked them out, and we had to manually reset that. While that occurred, we had pressure variations that affected the system. As Water Plant number 1 picked up the pressure at that far end of the system, and there's a delay between the time that the pressure gets there and the pumps start and stop, and so it tends to overrun and underrun the pressure levels. So at that end of the system, the pressure has a little more variation, and some folks may have noticed that. We, as I reported the last meeting, we had an off month on mowing. That's reflected in this report, with only 2 miles of ditch lines mowed. And as I reported the last meeting, that's picked up and that's continuing. And have, like today, we had almost a full day of ditch mowing. And we expect that to occur as we get into the growing season here. And that is the public works.
Thank you, David.
Mr. Mayor, I have a question.
Go ahead, Mr.
James. Mr. Snow, could you describe the water testing process? There's a one of the candidates running this year's election is telling people that we haven't tested our water in over a year and it won't be tested again until the summer.
Oh, that's completely erroneous. I didn't see that. We do testing every day of some type. We do residuals to make sure that our chlorine and chloramine levels are at the proper level to sanitize the system. We do that from taking grabs, from multiple locations in the system. We also do biological testing that we send out to a lab. Those are done regularly throughout the course of each month. And then we have certain tests, like heavy metal tests and such like lead and copper tests that are only done annually. Those are done on a schedule that is set by the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, and that is done in the summer. That was one that we switched from being on every 3 years to a 1 year. You may recall we sent out a notice to our residents that we had missed that change, so we did not do one in this last year. Having missed it, we can't do it until summer. That's when they require it to be done. So as we make the transition from testing for lead and copper every 3 years, we'll now be doing that every year. We'll be doing that starting this summer, and then we'll be doing it every summer. So I think it sounds like that's the test that is being talked about, but certainly there's plenty of other tests of the water, and the water safety is maintained all the time.
Thank you. Any other questions, Council?
I just have a comment, and this is kudos to Public Works. I called them with a message for Mr. Ingram. For example, our street, the ditches got mowed over the weekend, and I'm assuming it may be Mr. Dodd that's doing that currently, but it's the best mowing job that we have had done in quite some time. There have been times in the previous years where, yes, they were mowed, but there were still, you know, 2 foot trees in the ditches. So whomever is running the mowing apparatus for our ditches deserves high praise.
Well, operating the boom mower is an art.
Yeah.
There's a lot of moving parts there, and there's a lot of things in our ditch line that can be damaged or hit, and the newer operators are very cautious, and they keep it a little higher, and they don't get as close to things. And
whomever it is definitely.
I'll pass that along. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Moving on to item 8.0, business. Before we get started, item number 8.6 has been removed. All right. Alderman Snell wanted that removed, so 8.6 has been removed. Now moving on to item 8.1, consideration approval of invoices. If you have time, the council has time to go over the invoices, I'll entertain a motion.
Motion.
Thank you, Mr. Adams. Do we have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Wheeler. Any questions from the council on the invoices? If none being, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those against say nay. The ayes have it. The
moving on to item 8.2, consideration and action to adopt ordinance number 2016-201, amending special speed zones upon certain streets and repealing any construction works on the speed limit. Alderman James.
Thank you, Mayor Moses. Council will notice that this is under my name tonight. And I asked Mr. Stahl to do that, to try to take some of the vitriol and the comments that have been made about this ordinance because Mr. Stahl had put it forward. So I asked him to put it under my name. I'm not running for anything. And if I choose to run next time and somebody wants to vote against me because of it, then have at it. Mr. Stahl is just doing his job. There's no conspiracy. It was his job when he found out that we were not in compliance with state law to let council know, and that's what he did. There's not been a rush to raise speed limits. There's not been an election year ploy. I don't even know what that would mean. There's nothing sinister about it. There's nothing more important than making Shore Acres compliant with state law. Each of us stood up there and took an oath saying that we would follow the laws of the state and the country. So that's just the way I wanted to open this. That's why it's under my name, just to remove Mr. Stahl from it, because a lot of people seem to have a real problem with some things. So the first, this thing, what it breaks down to is it's the best option for the city, and it's a collaboration. It's not just me, it's Mr. Stahl, it's Mayor Moses, certainly, other members of council, many citizens have participated in this. And we've the solution that we've come up with is a win-win all the way around, because what it does is a three-step process. First, it puts us in compliance with state law. That's why we need to lower it to 25, because we need to be in compliance with state law. Second, planning and zoning will then designate almost all of our streets as residential. What that allows us to do is then take the third step, and the third step allows Commissioner's Court, upon our request, allows Commissioner's Court to set the speed limits on our residential streets at 20 miles per hour. So no longer will we have, you know, it sort of irks me that some people that think that, you know, you're a little more special if you're walking your dog in a certain part of town than if you're walking in a different part of town. I just don't think that. I think that the 20 mile per hour speed limit for all streets benefits every citizen. And the exceptions, of course, would be the Spur 501, Shore Acres Boulevard from 501 to the highway, the egress onto the highway, and of course the highway. Those would be the exceptions. As far as Commissioner's Court goes, the way Commissioner's Court works is there are four distinct precincts. Each commissioner has his own budget. It's a separate entity. Our commissioner is, we're part of Precinct 2. Our commissioner's name is Jack Mormon. When a commissioner puts something forward that applies only to their precinct, in other words, it doesn't cross into somebody else's precinct, it's a done deal. The commissioners do not do anything to mess with another commissioner's precinct because that's, again, that's separate budgets, it's separate everything. The only time the commissioners have adversarial votes is when it affects the entire county. There's obviously a county judge, Judge Ed Emmett, and he doesn't have a precinct. He also has a separate budget. But the only time you have an adversarial vote is when you cross precinct lines and it affects more than one precinct. And so I talked to Commissioner Moore last week and asked him if he would be willing to carry this. And of course he will. But there is one caveat to that, and that is that council needs to be united in this because he happens to live here and his wife has seen some of the Facebook stuff about this, and he wants us to be certain that that we are unanimous in our opinion of what's going to happen here. So basically what it boils down to is we need to pass this ordinance. Planning and zoning then holds a special meeting and designates our streets, Fairfield, Seagrove, East Forest, as residential. And then Mayor Moses sends a letter to Commissioner Mormon stating with the ordinance that we had done this. and with the, you know, Commissioner's Court, please designate these streets as 20 miles per hour. Commissioner Moorman doesn't. Now, again, it's a collaboration. And so nobody's buying. Here's another one. We're going to buy 25 mile per hour speed limit signs, put them up, and then we're going to have to buy 20. No, that's not going to happen. Nothing is going to happen until the end of this process. It's a three-step process. As far as the cost to place these signs, it's very minimal because we really only need four at most. Two problems, though. One on each entrance to the city, Old 146 and Shore Acres Boulevard, and then possibly if planning, zoning, mayor, whomever, Oak Shore to Fairfield, and maybe on the sunrise coming out of Bay Colony at Baywood. And just saying, those signs would say speed limit is 20 miles per hour unless otherwise posted. And that's it. And that's all we have to do. So I put this forward because I think it's a win-win. It's a great compromise. It gets us in compliance with the law immediately. And that's very important to me. And again, just trying to take the politics out of it. Let's just try to do what's right for this city.
Thank you, Honorable James. Questions from council?
Yep. I need a motion.
Mr. James, did you call a motion? You did.
I make a motion to adopt ordinance 2016-201, amending special speed zones on certain streets and repealing a construction work zone speed limit.
Second.
Second.
Go ahead. I'm doing Mike Wheeler. Okay, Mike Wheeler, doing the second. Okay. Now, any questions for Mr. James? What do you want over? Okay. My migraine's got me slow tonight. I apologize. You have no questions, we'll take a vote on it. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those against, say nay. The ayes have it. Moving on to item 8.3. Consideration and adoption to adopt resolution number 2016-168, opposing Gulf Coast Community Protection and Recovery District Storm Suppression Study Central Region, alternative number 2. There's two sections of this, number 1 and number 2, 8.4 be number 1. Before we go anywhere on this point, what I'd like to do is, if y'all indulge me, I've got about a 9-minute video I'd like to play. I asked Mayor McTell to be here because he's very much into this coastal spine. He's actually in Washington tonight laboring for this deal, and so he gave me a little video to play. I would like to play because I think it gives you a better understanding of what we're looking at between Proposition 1 and Proposition 2. So we'll play that, so folks, if you don't mind, just give us about 9 minutes to get that through.
We have the latest image from the National Weather Service. You can see here the storm is covering most of the Gulf of Mexico and is. We're hearing that the hurricane has now strengthened into a Category 5 storm with sustained winds of 165 miles per hour. The latest information indicates that the storm will make landfall tonight at Galveston. The storm surge is predicted to be in excess of 30 feet. We have the latest image from the National Weather Service. You can see here the storm is covering most of the Gulf of Mexico and is bearing down on the Houston-Galveston area. Residents are advised to leave as soon as possible to avoid the wind and flooding associated with this monster storm.
Mom, are we going to be okay?
National Guard. We have reports of massive flooding and hundreds of deaths along the upper coast.
The upper Texas coast has a long history of direct hits by major hurricanes. On September 8, 1900, a Category 4 storm raged through Galveston, killing an estimated 8,000 people. The Great Hurricane remains the deadliest hurricane disaster in U.S. history. In 1961, Hurricane Carla reached Category 5 status before pummeling the Texas coast with unbridled ferocity. Hurricane Alicia became the first billion-dollar storm in 1983 as it roared up I-45, destroying homes and blowing out windows in the towering skyscrapers of downtown Houston. In September 2005, Hurricane Rita ravaged the upper Texas coast, forcing 3.7 million panicked residents to flee their homes. 118 people died during the evacuation. In 2008, Hurricane Ike rocked Texas with a near direct hit on Galveston, sending a 10 to 15 foot storm surge onto the island and the western end of Galveston Bay.
For those of us living on the upper Texas coast, we see a major hurricane on average about once every 15 years. The problem is, in the lull between these big storms, we tend to forget how devastating they can be. We tend to think, well, we made it through the last one, why should I worry about the next one?
One in four Texas residents lives along the Gulf Coast, yet most people do not realize the risks associated with living in the coastal region.
The biggest killer in a hurricane is the surge. Probably three-quarters of the total damages in a hurricane is due to storm surge.
The Tri-County area of Galveston, Harris, and Chambers counties is one of the most flood-prone regions of the United States. The Houston Ship Channel and the Port of Houston is home to the largest petrochemical complex in the United States, with nearly $500 billion in economic activity.
This region is responsible for 25 to 35% of the petrochemicals and the fuels that are used and consumed in the entire United States. A 27-foot storm surge that reached the upper reaches of the Houston Ship Channel would truly be devastating.
So what can be done to prevent such devastation and help prepare for and mitigate the flooding caused by storm surge in the Tri-County area? A group of scientists and researchers at Texas A&M University Galveston has developed a multi-pronged approach that will dramatically reduce the impact of major storms on the upper Texas Gulf Coast. One component is a coastal barrier, or spine, called the Ike Dike, that when completed, would protect the Houston-Galveston area.
The idea is very simple. You stop the surge at the coast. You don't let it get into the inland waters.
Well, the coastal spine is an extension of the seawall, built in the early 1900s. It will extend along the coast with a hard structure, but covered with sand and seagrass, so you won't even know that there's a coastal barrier there. You'll also have gates along the Bolivar Roads area, which is the navigation channel. That'll help keep surge water out of the bay during times of hurricane.
This coastal barrier is based on technology implemented in the Netherlands to prevent repeated devastating storm surge from the North Sea.
They have big gates that protect them. They have barriers that protect them. They put it together. They have a coastal spine, just like we want here. They close those gates and use that barrier 26 times, and it's worked every time.
When completed, the Ike Dike and coastal spine will protect the upper Texas coast from the catastrophic destruction of hurricane storm surge. Another major component developed at Texas A&M University is a remarkable tool available to anyone with an internet connection. In 1993, the Texas legislature created the Center for Texas Beaches and Shores to address beach erosion and wetlands loss throughout the state. Dr. Sam Brody is the director of the center.
One of our major initiatives is the development and creation of the Texas Coastal Atlas. This is a web-based interactive system that helps homeowners, residents, and other coastal stakeholders understand the impacts of storm surge and flooding on property along the coast.
Dr. Brody's team wrote a software package that models the effects of different storm-related factors along the unprotected coastal regions. By clicking on a menu, users can select from more than 150 different filters or layers, ranging from flood damage to elevation to estimated losses within a region, a neighborhood, or an individual home or property. Because the Atlas accumulates data from multiple sources, homeowners, businesses, and developers can toggle specific layers on and off within the Atlas to view relevant information about a specific location or area of interest.
But the main purpose of the Atlas is to study what the impacts of storm surge might be in the Tri-County region. A user can zoom in on a specific area, take it on down further to a plot of land. On that individual plot, they can look at the actual structure that's on the plot.
Coastal residents can enter the address of their home, select different layers, and instantly see what would happen to their homes during each scenario. Families interested in the purchase of a new or existing home can learn about the location of a house or property and the quantifiable damage it may face. Business owners or developers can research the threat to a current or potential new location and understand the consequences of developing a specific parcel before a shovel ever hits the ground. The Atlas also incorporates a vertical slider bar that can be moved across the screen. By manipulating the slider function, residents and business owners can see the drastic reduction in flood damage if the Ike Dike and Coastal Spine were in place.
We can mitigate storm surge. We can't do anything about the wind and the rainfall, but we can certainly mitigate storm surge. The Ike Dike is designed to do that.
Once the Ike Dike is built, will protect people, property, and the economy along the Texas coastline.
They can protect not just the regional economy and not just the national economy, but the world economy.
Hurricanes can be devastating to communities and life-changing events for individuals. We need our citizens to contact their congressmen and their senators and say, we need you to protect our communities. We need you to protect our lives. We need you to protect our jobs and the economy. We need you to build the Ike Dike.
For more information about the Coastal Atlas and the Ike Dike, visit the Center for Texas Beaches and Shores website. Enter the address of your home or business to learn about the impact of storm surge and flooding in your area.
Put that one scale we looked at, 8-3, the one we're opposing. You put the opposing first, you have the opposing group first. This is the one, as you can see, that had two different scenarios here. 8.3.
Yep. Hot dogs are an all-American fit.
Anybody hungry? Okay. But the 2016-168 is opposing, and what we're looking at is opposing alternative number two. And this was the number two one they were looking at. So what we're trying to do is, most of the cities, I would say most of the cities, quite a few, all around that area, all the mayors have been talking back and forth via email, looking to basically get a city resolution from all the cities so they'll have that backup. We were one of the last few that hadn't gotten it done. I was trying to get it on the agenda, so that's why we get it done tonight. Seabrook, team, everybody down the lines, both ways, are all for the option number one. And so that's what I wanted to present. I wish Michelle could have been here tonight to go over some more, because he's got it down to an art on this. But what we're looking for is to move that forward. So with that being said, I'm going to entertain a motion first.
Make a motion to adopt Resolution 2016-168 opposing Gulf Coast Community Protection and Recovery District Storm Suppression Study alternative number two.
Thank you, Ms. Snell. Do we have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Charlie. Any questions from council at this time? Okay, if none, all those opposed, all those say aye.
Favor.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those against say nay. I promise I won't come to the meeting and deal with migraine. Mm-hmm. Okay, moving 8.4, consideration action to adopt resolution number 2016-169, supporting Gulf Coast Community Protection Recovery District Storm Surge Suppression Study Central Region Alternative Number 1. This is just the opposite, and basically we are supporting now. With that being said, I'll entertain a motion.
This is in support of the ICAC.
That is correct. The Coastal Spy, as per se.
I'll make a motion to adopt resolution 2016-169, supporting Gulf Coast Community Protection Recovery District Storm Suppression Study Central Region Alternative Number 1.
Thank you, Mr. Adams. We have a second.
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Wheeler. That being on the table, we have a motion on the table. Any questions from the council? None being, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those against say nay. The ayes have it. Thank you. Moving on to item 8.5. Consideration action to adopt ordinance number 2016-203, modifying the recording requirements in the city council meeting minutes. Alderman Snell.
I put this on here, and this is the second time that this has been on the agenda. It was once back in 2013. We were kind of new to the whole recording thing, which has been overwhelmingly well received by most members of council, well, members of council and citizens alike. The reason I put this on there is written, this is not doing away with written minutes. It's just that the written minutes will no longer be the official record of the council meeting. The official record will be the audio recording. Sometimes we have some discrepancies in our meeting minutes. Some things are omitted. Some things get a little subjective. And, I mean, sometimes these meetings go on 3 hours, and you can't really adequately summarize that in, you know, a couple, maybe three pages. And so it's kind of, it's not thorough enough, in my opinion, for it to be construed as an official record. We like to sit there and know examples. Our good neighbors here in LaPorte, they use the audio recordings as their official minutes, and they have for quite some time. So like I said, this is not doing away with any written minutes. Just council will not have to approve written minutes to make them as part of the city record, because it will not be the official record. Mr. Saul or Annie or whomever currently does them, they can write them, you know, ad nauseum if they so choose. That is a good tool to kind of find out where you might want to be in the listing of the recording if you're looking for a specific item, or you can just look at the agenda. So I just think it will be a lot more efficient and more accurate to utilize the audio recordings as the official record of the city meeting minutes rather than written. Takes away any human error, oversight, etc. So, that being said, I make a motion to pass ordinance 2016-203 modifying recording requirements of city council meeting minutes.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Mr. James. We have a motion on the table. Any questions for the council members? Starting down, Mr. Jennings, go from this way.
Yeah. Just to be clear.
I don't know what that means.
We're not doing away with the summary notes, I guess you would call it, the Cliff Notes version of the meeting.
Yeah.
We're just making the recording the official so that you can go into more, because it is the actual meeting.
Correct.
Okay.
I'm good.
Okay. No other questions?
Oh, yeah. Oh, Mr. Jennings, it does that on page 507, section 2-86. It does say that following a council meeting and then all of the preparing and what it's to be in it takes all that away. So there is nothing here to even require or suggest that there be a...
You don't have to. It's not a requirement.
Well, it will be a requirement for certain things, whether the city wants to be or not, because when we take certain actions for other entities and agencies, they require us to submit approved minutes of that action for their function. So there will be occasions when there will have to be written minutes that will have to be approved by council.
Mr. Stahl, are you saying we should leave Section 286A alone in its original form?
Yes, I would.
Okay. So, we need a motion to amend.
You have to have a secondary motion. You can do a secondary motion. And that's what section is that again, David?
2-86.
And how does that make a difference from what we're doing now?
Well, it, from a legal perspective, doesn't make any difference from what we do now, except that for council's own use, the recording will be the official record. Functionally, the minutes will be what minutes are required to be and not expanded as they are currently. In other words, the purpose of the minutes, the only legal requirements that the minutes have is what the action taken by council was. So what the item was, what the vote was, and recording that, the time you started, the time you ended, and that's it. So there's no description of comments or discussion, or it's just strictly what the vote on each item was. That's all that's required to be in minutes, statutorily. actions taken.
No citizens' comments?
No, sir. Just the action that council took. So if you make this change, I would... My intent would be to abbreviate it down to just what is required, and minutes would probably just be one or two pages of what action was taken on each item. That would also meet the requirements of those entities that require us to have after council approves it. So I also guess we wouldn't bring those to council for approval.
Right.
Unless somebody requested them.
That sounds even better because they're shorter.
Okay.
So we need a motion to amend. Is all we need?
What exactly are we amending in this section?
I guess when all of this is taken out, it would stay.
Omitting any changes to section 286?
Yes.
So, okay, well, that being said, if you want to call a motion.
Now, and if your intention is not to approve them at all, that section, in the last paragraph down there, you might see where it says final minutes are not prepared. Reviews and place on an upcoming agenda. Mm-hmm. You might want to take that out.
We need to get a motion out. We'll rewrite this and post it in the next class.
So basically, we're just taking out all of section A and 286.
Okay.
This is
see if I can't butcher this.
You call the first motion.
All right, so I'm going to make a motion to amend ordinance 2016-203 pertaining to section 286, subsection A, omitting any changes in section 286, subsection A, except for the last or the paragraph stating final minutes, beginning with final minutes and ending with city approval. Or council approval.
For the record, go ahead and read it out.
The paragraph stating final minutes are usually prepared within 2 to 3 weeks following the meeting. The city clerk reviews the final draft and then places on upcoming agenda for council approval.
Okay. All right. Motion made by Alderman Snell. We have a second.
Second.
All right. Colonel.
Second.
No. Who was the second?
No. The second is wrong. So now the question, any questions from the council on the second modification here?
We're taking that, paragraph out.
Right here, you're taking the last one out.
The last paragraph.
Right here, guys, we'll take it out.
Everything else stays in.
Everything else stays the same. Correct. Any other questions?
So we have a motion and a second?
Yes, sir. You're okay?
Yep. I'm all right with that.
All right. All those in favor say aye.
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 Moving in. Okay. Secondary motion in fact. We're going to move on to the original motion. The consideration action to adopt ordinance number 2016-203 modifying the recording requirements of the City Council meeting in minutes. We have the motion from Alderman Snell, Mr. Jennings, the secondary. The second modification has already been made. The first modification, now back to this. I'm going to ask one more time, any additional questions on this at all? Before I take a vote. Sweetie, you're okay?
I'm all right.
Okay. That being said, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those against say nay. The ayes have it. With that being said, I want to thank the citizens for showing up and all the council members. I appreciate their hard work and effort. It's 8:04. We're adjourned.